tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with the remarkable actor, Raphael Petlock. Raphael is currently starring in a production of a brand new play called Why Can't I Be You at the Players Backstage Theater. This is the play that won the play reading contest last year and has been given a full production. A natural actor, Raphael was a featured extra in the movie The Great Walendas with Jeff Bridges as a toddler. He was on stage in several operas before he was six. A virtually photographic memory, Raphael was and still is able to look at a script and remember it. His story is compelling. It's fascinating. It's often disturbing, but finally uplifting. Listen to Raphael describe the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, and redemption. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Sometimes people ask me, how is it possible for a person not to be the person they really are? But it's clear to me as a psychotherapist that many too many of us are not at all who we really are. We're acting out versions of ourselves, portions of ourselves, but not the whole truth about ourselves. It's clear that we come into life with the ability to be our whole self. Just ask a 2-year-old what he or she wants to wear or eat, or whether he or she wants to lie down and go to sleep. And you'll see that we have the knowledge, passionate knowledge, of what we want, what we don't want, what we like, what we don't like, who we are when we come into this life. And yet, so many of us experience obstacles to being that person that we really are. We encounter discouragement. Someone doesn't like something about the way we are, how we act, what we think, what we're drawn to, what our instincts are. Of course, that is quite often our family of origin. A parent who really wants a quiet child, and when they get a kind of boisterous one, they let that boisterous child know that is not all right. Or the other way around. Also, schools, teachers are quite often capable of inadvertently discouraging a child. Really, honey, don't sing when the rest of the group sings. Or, no, 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 the sky cannot be red. Discourages a potential performer, a potential artist. Religious organizations, unfortunately, have ideas about what a person should be and shouldn't be, and not everybody fits into that. Peers, my God, we hear so much about bullying these days. You're too fat, you're too thin, those clothes aren't nice. These imprecations are too much for most of us, and we find ways to pretend that we are not whatever it is those people or institutions that are so important to us don't seem to like. I interview people who make their living or their life within art because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And the interview that I'm playing today with Raphael Pedlock is really a kind of poster child for this. Raphael, as I said in the run-up, was a little actor in a movie in toddlerhood. He came into this world knowing passionately what he wanted to do, and you'll hear him tell the story of the discovery that, quote, put the nail in the coffin. And it was when he was 5 or 6 and was in La Boheme. It's a fascinating story, and Raphael tells it with his natural enthusiasm, energy, passion, humor, and self-deprecation. So I'm going to let him tell it to you. Here now is the delightful Raphael Pedlock. So I'm here with Raphael Pedlock, and I am interviewing Raphael because he is about to appear in Why Can't I Be You at the Players Theatre, which will open on
August 23rd.
On August 23rd. And I am explaining to him that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's clear to me that the art to which you have given your life is the art of acting.
Certainly is.
Yes, it certainly is.
Has been for my entire life.
Yes. And so I only ask one question, and that is, do you remember the very first time that acting, performing, having people look at you, telling stories, playing a character, any of that, drew you, called you? Yes, you're shaking your head.
Absolutely.
Okay, tell me.
It was 1980. Long before he was known as Maestro, and we all called him Victor Dorenzi, and he was doing Madame Butterfly, and this was before they had the opera. This was at the old Oslo in the back of the Ringling Museums. And I was 5 years old, not yet 6, and I was playing Trouble.
You're kidding.
No.
Well, wait, back up. How did that happen?
I had already done some stuff. I had been a featured extra in the movie The Great Walendas with Jeff Bridges.
How did that happen?
My father and my mother.
Your father and your mother what?
Whether it was a curse or a blessing, I was born into this business. My father was the artistic lighting director for the Oslo, and my mother was their wardrobe supervisor.
So are you saying they had this adorable little boy and they immediately put him on stage?
They were working the union where my dad, a local 412 IOTC, was doing the stage work for that movie. Uh-huh. And that was how that came about.
So they needed a little boy, and your father
said... For trouble, and my dad was doing the lighting, and my mother was backstage doing the dressing, and
they said, please, take care of our son.
Here, take him.
Here, we're busy.
He's yours. We have nothing. We don't need him.
Well, I doubt it.
He's free slave labor. He's yours.
Right?
He'll work for peanuts. No, he will. He loves them. He'll work for peanuts.
So these are your first gigs, right?
Right.
And before that, did you express any interest in performing? Did you stand on the table and sing or, you know?
I was an animated youth.
Well, that I believe.
But, yeah. Real stretch. But I was a natural for this. One of the things I have is a photographic memory. I have the ability to look at a script and memorize it.
Oh, my God, and you always had it.
And always had it, and that's why I can, to answer your question, I remember the moment that I knew I was an actor.
Yes.
And this play was, not play, this opera was actually, it was being staged by a guy named Bob Strain, a long, long time ago at the Oslo. And it was the final scene of Madame Butterfly when she commits suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And she brings me out on stage, and I had two different toys. My favorite was this small little ship, which I actually had into my 20s. One of my many moves in New York City, that got lost. But I'm on stage, she blindfolds me, gives me the toy, and I'm playing with it. You know, Lieutenant Pinkerton has left her and is taking me with him, and she commits suicide. So she's behind me. And this one particular night on stage, she commits suicide and she falls over, and it's a thud.
Right.
It's really loud. And all of a sudden, I couldn't let that go.
And you're 4 years old?
I was 5 years old, and I had to react to that. It did not feel right to ignore the fact that she had done that. So all I did was put my head up and look around and go, Mama!
Oh, my God.
And the audience goes, oh! And very quickly after that, this Bob Strain guy tried to kill that. And I come off stage and he goes, that was wonderful, that was beautiful, that was natural acting, don't ever do it again.
Yeah, right.
And I knew he was wrong.
Yeah.
But that moment, I have never forgotten, and I don't know if it's not a bad thing, it's this wonderful feeling of it's the right choice.
Right.
It's real. It's what I would do. You know, my mother just went kerplunk
right.
behind me.
Right.
Any child is going to especially kid, is
right.
going to react
right.
to that. It was, it's this warm feeling that is right. And then, of course, this whole audience going, oh, and having everyone's attention, that sealed the deal. That was the final nail in the coffin. And from then on, I knew exactly what I wanted to be.
Okay. So did you know it? Intellectually, I mean, I want to do this when I grow up, or did you just have the sense, this feels right to me, I love this, I want to do this. Do you know what I'm asking you?
Both. I loved the way it felt, I loved to do it, and from that moment on, I was hooked. Whenever I could go, my brothers were not so enthusiastic, I'm the middle of three, whenever I could go on with my father to the Oslo, even if it was just for a light check, and I would sit on his shoulders while he would, you know, count the lights and see that everyone was working. Whenever I could get into that theater, I would.
Wow. So, and you said your brothers weren't that enthusiastic, meaning they didn't want to go.
My older brother works for the Department of Agriculture. He's the black sheep of an arts family.
That's very funny. Okay, so so clearly you're taking every opportunity you can to get into a theater. What's the next thing that happens for you?
I did several things at the Oslo. The next show I did at the Oslo was La Boheme, and then Orpheus in the Underworld. But those are minor things. At La Boheme, I had a featured little bit as the pickpocket, but my first...
I'm just curious, how old were you when you did this stuff?
Oh, next couple of years. Right. And then the first real role I had was Tiny Tim in their first Christmas Carol.
Wow.
They have done it for decades now. but it was, we're talking in the 80s. And there came a point that I was, this is back long before Michael Donald Edwards, when it was a repertory theater with a local group of actors that people wanted to see, like Brad Wallace and Doug Jones, you know.
Yeah.
And there was one season where I was actually doing three shows in rep.
Oh, my God.
And I was Tiny Tim and the Turkey Boy in Christmas Carol. I was Wally Webb in Our Town, and I was Bert, and I have done All My Sons by Arthur Miller three times. I've played Chris, George, and I was Bert in 1987 at the Oslo. So,
and how old were you then?
At this point, 87, I was 12.
Okay, so you're a...
I did Christmas Carol three times. So, I mean, there were, you know, one year I was Tiny Tim, and then one year I was Tiny Tim, Young Scrooge, and the Turkey Boy, and then one year when I was a little too old for Tiny Tim, I became Young Scrooge and the Turkey Boy, and my younger brother Sam took over as Tiny Tim, but he was a little too young and had trouble with his lines. And there's a famous story in my family about Sam going on stage with the quintessential Tiny Tim line and going, "God bless us, anyone?"
Oh, that's great. That's great. Okay, so were you acting in school?
I went to VPA here, and this is where actually things really took off for me. I had been cast. This is back in the days of Ken Weegar and Jerry Lord, and I had been cast in their big musical at the end of the year. I'd done every show that year at the VPA, but they were doing Once Upon a Mattress, and I was cast as the minstrel. And I decided to audition for John Ulmer, who was then the artistic director at the Oslo, because Horton Foote, who was an Academy Award-winning screenwriter, he wrote A Trip to Bountiful and the screenplay to Kill Mockingbird, he's the guy who won Academy Awards, was doing a brand new play called Talking Pictures. This is 1990. It's the first season at the new Oslo Center. And I auditioned for him in Horton Foote, and I get the role of Pete Anderson. This is an Equity production. It got me my Equity card.
Oh, my God.
And
how old were you?
I was 15.
Oh, my God.
And again, the I'm not allowed to swear on this, am I?
Sure you are.
Okay, the bullshit of people in theater.
Yes.
Especially people who didn't quite get where they wanted to. Having arguments with Jerry Lord, real name Plord, that, oh, no, you need to stay in our high school production of Once Upon a Mattress. You need to learn loyalty, and, you know, this is not what you do. And, you know, me just being like, oh, you know, wow, you know, this is my teacher, and going home to my father and saying, you know, this is what Jerry told me, and I don't know. And my dad goes, Equity, are you kidding me? In Equity, you give 2 weeks' notice. That is the business. He is lying to you. Don't listen to this man. You are never going to forgive yourself if you pass up this opportunity. And to this day, I mean, there's been others since then, but that is the first. If you go to Samuel French's and pick up Talking Pictures, you will see Raphael Petlock originating the role as a Pete Anderson in Talking Pictures.
God.
So,
my God. And good for your father.
Jerry Plord and Ken Weegar's never forgave me. I was immediately put on probation at VPA. Yeah, these guys were not as nice as they come across in their public, you know, view or whatever you want to call it. I stayed there till my junior year and still was cast in practically everything. They did Fools. I was the lead in Fools. I was pretty much in every show. And then in my junior year, I went up to New York City to visit a friend, and I auditioned for Marymount Manhattan College. And I hadn't even graduated high school. I was a junior. I had taken my SATs, and they accepted me on my, not only had they accepted me on my SATs and my auditions, but they gave me a full tuition.
Good grief.
And I said, well, I haven't graduated high school yet. And they said, well, you can, they had a 24-credit college program where you could earn a New York City GED, which, you know, really a high school diploma in Sarasota, Florida, or the state of New York GED. They're probably about the same equivalency.
Right.
So So then I went to Marymount Manhattan College for a BFA in theater. And
at
17.
17.
17 years old, I was living in New York City, and I would stay there until 2000 and, I believe 2007, 2008. 2007 is when I moved back here at the age of 33. So I lived practically half my life in New York City.
Okay, so do you want to tell me what happened there?
In New York?
Yes.
Sure.
So you graduate, so you'll go to school, and for the first time you actually have training. Is this true?
Well, you know, I got a lot of training at the Oslo, you know, doing professional theater.
Of course, right.
I took classes with John Ulmer here. He was a wonderful guy and a great director and a good teacher. And then, you know, I'm not going to completely knock it. There were some very good things I learned at BPA. Not so much my freshman year from Jerry Lord. And I'm just going to be blunt about it. But my sophomore year, I had a wonderful teacher. One of the best teachers in my life, and that was Annie Morrison. And it was the year I met Annie Morrison, and she was my acting teacher my sophomore year, and took me to the next level.
Wow.
Which, you know, all of that culminating into that when I went and auditioned my junior year for a major college in New York. At the time, Marymount Manhattan College was one of the top 10 theater colleges in the country. Mm-hmm. They've come down since then, but at the time, they were up there. And, you know, to be accepted like that was a turning point in my life.
Okay, so did you learn stuff there?
Absolutely. I had wonderful teachers. My freshman year was Bill Bordeaux. My sophomore year was Richard Niles. And they were just wonderful teachers. And then I got, you know, I got into, you know, hey, I'm here.
Okay, wait, I have a question. You said you got cast in the musical. Do you sing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I did my first year back here. I did the Sarasota Magazine, the Best Supporting Actor for Titanic. I was Harold Bride in the Players Titanic. Yeah, you know.
I didn't see it.
And then I was in...
Well, wait a minute. Did you take voice?
Oh, yeah. Musical theater, of course.
I didn't know.
In college. Absolutely.
Okay. Do you dance?
I move very well. Yeah, right. I took movement, but I've never taken any sort of formal tap or... I took ballet when I was 8 and 9. My parents were they weren't thrilled that I was going to be an actor, but they knew there was no stopping me, so they were supportive.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of, you know, ballet, a lot of arts training as a kid.
Okay. All right, so you get out of college, and you're in New York.
Before I even got out of college, I auditioned and was signed to the Gage Group, which was a bi-coastal, a large agency at the time. And then I had a smaller commercial agent that I also picked up called Frontier Booking International, FBI for short. And I, you know, pounded the pavement, auditioned a lot, and did really well for a while. I was in major motion pictures. I had a couple of under fives that ended up on cutting room floors, but, you know, it's the way it goes. I had... small bit parts in a now dead vein of television known as soap opera on Guiding Light and As the World Turns, playing a waiter on one and a drug addict in a jail cell in another.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, under fives or under five lines.
Yeah.
I did really well in equity off-Broadway productions on Theater Row. I did quite a few of those, and also in commercials. Mm-hmm. And I had about a half dozen national commercials, everything from Schweppes Ginger Ale to Partnership for a Drug-Free America, which is interesting and I'll get back to in a second, and lots of voiceovers. I do many different voices.
Yeah.
As you... have seen. You saw me in the Sam Cooke story, playing eight different characters.
Yes,
and
exactly.
So I did a lot of voiceover, a lot of commercial work, and yeah, I made, there were times that I was, you know, not only making a few thousand a month from getting gigs, but I had royalty checks coming in for all of this and was doing quite well. And for, you know, the first couple years out of college, I was doing really well. And I had always been kind of a wild kid, but never a problem as far as substance abuse until my 20s. Early 20s is when I basically, I don't know if we should talk about
things. If you don't mind.
Oh, it just tells, you know, what happened. This guy had it all, and then I had become a cocaine addict.
How did that happen?
Hanging out with the wrong crowd. I reached a level in the business where you get noticed.
Yeah.
And you get noticed a lot by people who will never go anywhere and attach themselves to you. Parasites, vampires, however you want to call them.
Yeah.
Not the best influences. And a lot of those people had grown up in New York and were more worldly, shall we say,
yes.
Or street smart.
Street smart, right.
And, yeah, it ended up being the end of my first shot at being an actor. And it took me a long time to recover. I went through that for a couple of years. I lost my Upper East Side apartment. I lost, you know, a Cadillac. I lost everything.
Oh, dear.
And ended up living in Harlem. Not even nice Harlem, Spanish Harlem, which was really just not a nice place.
And at a time when it wasn't so good in New York either, we're talking, right?
We're talking. Nah, it was after the Dinkins era. It was when Giuliani, who I got to be honest, you know, the first time around I voted for him, and he really did clean up the city. I mean, he turned 42nd Street from, you know, college girls or girls working their way through college, you know,
those little places
to Disneyland North.
Right.
And, you know, he did really clean up the city. But when this happened, we're talking the mid-90s, giving away my age here. And, yeah, it wasn't as safe as it was now. I mean, contrary to what the Republicans said at their convention, crime is at its lowest now, as it was in 1990. But, you know, that's the great thing about politics. They can just lie through their teeth and get away with it.
Right.
But crime is at its lowest now since 1990. So we're talking 95, 96. I was 22.
Jesus.
So, yeah, you know, I basically put my career up my nose. And
your life.
And my life. And that was a couple
of
years.
Did you know... When did you know you were addicted?
When I had I had sneaking suspicions as I lost my agents and everything else, but I came out of my apartment on 114th Street between First and Pleasant, which it wasn't.
No.
And there was the local bodega on the corner where I would get my groceries. And I was walking up to the corner, and I take a right, and then a couple buildings down, a couple brownstones down, was this bodega. And as just talk about the way God works. You know, if I had left my house 2 minutes earlier, I probably wouldn't be here. As I was walking up to the corner, I hear pop, pop, pop.
Oh, gosh.
And... as I turn the corner, I see these two respectable-looking gentlemen, of course, running out of the bodega, and I walk into the bodega, and there's the guy who had been, you know, behind the register, who I chatted with every day for 6 months, dead, and a pile of blood pouring out the back of him.
And that's right. 2 minutes earlier, you'd have been right
behind. I would have been in the store buying, you know, Chef Boyardee or whatever that day, and cat food, and that would have been the end of me.
Right.
So, that was when I decided I needed to get my life together. And the first time, I didn't do it right. I decided I didn't need help, that I could do it myself. And I locked myself in my apartment and detoxed for 3 days. Which worked as far as I haven't used cocaine since 1996.
Right.
But I just cross-addicted into alcohol.
Yeah.
And I moved out of that place, and I moved into the West Side Inn on 107th in Amsterdam. Not that much of a better neighborhood, but it was away from, because you know, you know how compartmentalized New York is. You know, hey, where you been, man? Oh, I've been all over the shadow. I ain't seen you. And you're like a mile apart. And I lived there for, I want to say, 4 or 5 months. I couldn't get a job in the business. I couldn't even get a job as a stagehand, which is what my father had done.
Is this because nobody would hire you because of the...
Yes, because of my addiction. And right. I had not been the nicest person on cocaine. I would walk into auditions, audition wonderfully, and then sit there and look at the writer and go, you actually think anybody's going to see this shit?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a real prick of a 20-something.
Yeah.
And I got this job selling hair salon promotions on the street in New York. And you'd be walking around in New York and some guy would say, hey, I got a question for you about your hair. And they'd sell you this whole package of, you know, I mean, it wasn't like a ripoff. You would get these things for $60. And there were weeks that I was convincing women to hand me their credit card or $60 cash on the streets of New York.
You're a good actor.
I was good at it. And I met a Swedish girl who was doing the same thing, who obviously couldn't work legally in the country. She was on a student visa. And decided it would be a wonderful idea to get married.
Oh, of
at
course.
24 and a half. So that lasted all of, I think, total 7 years. Only married about five. But not the best idea. And the whole, you know, European drink all the time thing didn't help. And then, having gotten my life stabilized, I started working as a stagehand, which I had done here in Sarasota, Florida. I'm a member of IATSE Local 412. So I worked gigs in New York and earned my Local 1 stagehands card. I was a member of Local 1, the mother local. Hey, you're a onesie. Hey, oh. And, you know, here I was. I had this fantastic job, everything from doing Broadway shows. I was a spot operator on Titanic, the
really?
Musical.
The real one.
So I knew, I used to spot the guy who did Harold Bride. So I knew it like, you know, the back of my, you know,
right.
The night was alive with a thousand voices. I knew it like the back of my, you know, back of my hand. And then, I mean, I had a steady gig. I was the assistant electrician, which is basically the number two for the Today Show for years. And I was making great money. I was making 70, 80 grand a year.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it. I hated it. Mm. There is nothing worse. Yeah, people ask me, oh, my God, you got to meet all these famous people. It was wonderful. Wasn't it wonderful? Oh, yeah. I mean, I did. I mean, in the early 2000s, I met Senator Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the first season of The Apprentice. I explain it to people like this. Imagine you were a world-class hockey player, something happened, and now you're running the Zamboni machine, watching others do what you want to do. And I for a while, worked on the props crew at Guiding Light. You know what it was like to come back there, having been on that show once as an actor? And here I am now behind the lights, watching some schmuck that I'm 10 times better than.
Yeah, right.
At least in my mind. And yeah, it was hell, and it slowly drove me into the depths of alcoholism. And I would have spurts of acting still. I'm not going to make it sound like I didn't act anymore. I would occasionally do something. I even, in 2002 and in 2006, I did a couple of equity off-Broadway shows. You know, I still occasionally would get a good acting gig, but most of the time I was just a stagehand, and I despised it. And it drove me into alcoholism, which was why I moved back to Sarasota, Florida. I was done with the business. I was going to come back here, go back to college, and do something else. I had this crazy idea of solar engineering. You know, Florida, the Sunshine State. There's no way the governor of a Sunshine State would have a problem with solar engineering. So I left New York in 2007. Swore I was done with the business, got back here, and, you know, got to make money, got to have a job. Well, I've got my Local 412 card. I'll work here as a stagehand and make money. The first job I get, 2 weeks back in town, not even, I think I've been back a week. We're going to make you the deck electrician for this Hope to Go to Broadway show, Tale of Two Cities. It's this new musical. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be great. No. It's not a ripoff of Les Mis. It's going to be wonderful. So I'm doing this show, and whatever, it is what it is. And, you know, I'm joking with the actors, and of course, you know, I'm having a good time. I met wonderful people like Nick Wyman, and as the run wears on, these quote-unquote master students in acting at their conservatory, who are supposed to be, you know, whoa, I'm getting a master's degree in theater, one night, one of them decides to go visit his mother in Tampa. Doesn't call, doesn't show up, doesn't, he's not there to go on stage.
You're kidding.
I wish. Actually, I don't.
You don't wish, right?
Because right. They turned around and said, do you think, you used to act, do you think you can go on stage and do what he does? He's got a couple of lines, and he does this and that scene, and he plays a sea guy in this scene, and a soldier there, or whatever it was. And, you know, yeah, sure. You bet. And then another one of them got pink eye in one eye. And everybody said, don't touch your other eye.
Right.
What do you think he did?
Oh, you're kidding.
So then all of a sudden, he's out of the show for the last week or so. And they, can you do his?
Right.
You bet. Absolutely. By the end of the show, Natalie Toro, you know, the stars of the show were like, you know what? Raffi should get a bow with the rest of the cast for what he's... And I did. I went up there and took a bow.
Wow.
With the rest of the rats, as they called them. And, of course, we all know that show lasted 2 weeks on Broadway. But
right.
That was it.
Oh, Hooked.
Not so much Hooked as I'm looking at these, you know, not all of them. Some of them are fantastic. But I'm looking at some of these conservatory students and I'm going, you know what? If 4 years of college didn't get you working, two more here ain't going to do it either.
Right.
And saying, you know what? I really had a gift at this. I really had something. So that was it.
Okay, but you're still drinking.
I was still drinking when this was going on.
Right.
And unhappy being back here, you know, that just that vague sense of I failed.
I blew it.
I fucked up my life.
Right.
And, you know, I still got great reviews here. I mean, Terra Nova, I mean, you know, they...
Well, you were amazing.
Yeah, so, you know.
You were amazing. You've been amazing in everything. I don't care what you've done to yourself. It has not affected. You get on stage, and none of that seems to matter.
Except for that twitch, but other than that.
Okay.
But, after Terra Nova, which is 2012, is when I hit rock bottom with the alcohol. By this point, I was putting away, between you and me, an entire bottle of scotch a night.
Oh, I believe you. I think I saw you do it. You know, I was startled, truly, to watch you.
And
you kept walking.
Yes.
You know.
In a straight line.
And you were charming.
Yeah.
Anyway, right?
I was never nasty drunk.
Well, no, you weren't.
But it was a problem. And I could be. If somebody set me off, you know, then it was gloves were off.
Yeah.
But it was at that point that I realized I had to get sober. So I left the business again, completely this time. And I actually got into AA, which is what did it. It saved my life. It was the only thing that was going to save my life. And it was the only way I was going to get back to my full potential. Of course, any actor loves to hear that he's brilliant always on stage, but... I was 90% of what I'm capable of 110% that I'm capable of. And it is, it is a blessing. And yes, I left after Terra Nova, and I did not come back until 2015, because, you know, nobody gets sober their first try. And I came back in June of 2015. I with Elliot again in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is Brick.
Yeah, you were great.
And I did not have to work as a stagehand this year. Just the way God works. I have had paying acting gigs since last July.
You said, I'm ready, and the universe said, okay, we've been waiting.
Yeah, finally.
Right.
And that's my story in a nutshell. So, and then here we are now. This show is written by two stagehand friends of mine from 412. Well, it's written by Llewellyn Jones, who is a very good friend that I've known for over 10 years. And it's directed by Jeff Dillon, who I've known probably for 20 years. So it is based, I don't want to say based on anything, it is the story of a spoiled, drug, alcohol-addicted rock star and his number one fan, his stalker, who breaks into his house. Why Can't I Be You is what it's called.
Uh-huh.
And
who are you?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm the psychopath. There's nobody better than the crazy guy to play on stage. Lucy Manuel plays the girlfriend engaged to this rock star who's played by a guy who actually... I have met doing many things at the Starlight Theater, Camilo Andres Bustos.
Yes.
So, and he plays the rock star. And it's
so it's just the three characters?
No, it's four. It's four. The executive director of the opera, and his name slips me right now. And we're not Facebook friends, so I can't look it up. He plays a sort of Jimmy Kimmel late night talk show host. Mm-hmm. Who interviews first Jason's character and then later another character in the play. So, but most of the play, Lou is a brilliant writer, and he just doesn't get enough credit in this town because, you know, there's this, from the Sarasota I grew up into, this hoity-toity, oh, it has to be from New York attitude.
Yeah.
And so many local people are just not. And there's so much talent here.
I know.
And it's brilliant. I mean, the budget has minimal because it all takes place in one room.
Oh, my
this
God.
Guy's bedroom.
Right.
And, you know, the scenes in the talk show, it's just a quick light change. You know, you've got a guy directing it who's been doing technical theater for 40 years, and I have 20 years in tech theater, and Lou's been doing it for 20 years. I mean, talk about knowing how to make something change segue, you know?
Yeah.
So it's this brilliant concept, and it's this interaction between this rock star and his stalker who has broken into his house, locked him in his own bedroom with him, and he can't get out, and this guy wants to be him. You know, why can't I be you?
Yeah.
And it's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's a creepy comedy. Don't get me wrong here, because Lou's hilarious, and the lines are hilarious, but there are parts of it that
are dark.
Downright dark and creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's in my opinion, and you know, having done this again for, well, I'm 42 and worked with Jeff Bridges when I was three, so 39 years of this, it is a really tight, fast-paced, I mean, it's crisp, and it's you're not going to be sitting there looking at your program, I'll tell you that. You're going to be engaged the entire time. And, you know, it's something I'm very excited to be a part of.
Great.
And there's always, now it isn't, I want to say it's brand new because it won Best Play in the Players New Play Festival last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's been seen as a reading, but, you know, a full production on its feet at the backstage of the Players, and it's the first time, so, you know, we got the writer there and the director and, you know, actors in that position, you know, especially because they know me, Jeff and Lou, and because of my experience, you know, there's a level of trust there that, you know, I can, hey, look, you know, this might work better. And they're, oh, yeah, you know what? So there's a real sort
collaboration.
Of... collaboration. Well, yeah, collaboration. Absolutely. That's the perfect word. Mm-hmm. That's the perfect word for it, of putting this thing up for the first time. And this, and again, having done this for so many years, there's this energy. There is a vibe that I feel in the room of something that's going to be great.
Oh, yay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And you can feel it, that this is... You know, we're into the second week of rehearsal, so it's early, but it's there are points where it is
it's cooking.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, well I can't wait. And I had another question. And
fish, cheese whiz, large flying mammal, ladder, bread box, microwave. None of
boy,
these are it.
Not bad. I'll tell you, you. You are never getting old.
No. Peter Pan syndrome.
Well, it looks good on you, so never mind. Okay. So, I know. Do you have anything coming up beside this? Do you know? I just wanted to check.
I am doing, also this month, a play reading, which will be directed by Nate Jacobs, associate artistic director, Travis Ray.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful guy.
He is.
Lovely guy. And he is directing a play reading at the Urbanite Theater on August 20th.
What is it?
I don't know. I still have not gotten the script. The writer is doing some final edits, and he will send me the script this week. It will be, I am there from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I believe the show will be a 2 o'clock matinee reading. And that'll be August 20th at the Urbanite, where I did a reading last year, I think it was, or earlier this year or last year, called Abraham Lincoln Was a Faggot. You know, they always do really strange stuff there, but good. I like Brendan Reagan and Summer, and I hope to one day get on their stage. And a full production, not just these little readings, but you know, it's good to, you know, be somewhere else and get a paycheck. So hey, you gotta love that. And that is also this month. After that, I don't know.
But you will. So I have one more question, and it's, having spent a life in this work, is there anything you would say about what that's like?
In what regard?
In any regard. What it felt like to you, how you feel about it, what you think about it.
I mean, as like as advice to younger people?
You could do that, or you could just say what it's meant to you.
It has been ups and downs and lights and darks, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything. And, you know, to sit back now and I'm not that old, so we'll say a third quarter armchair quarterback or coach or whatever you want to call it, and say, you know, if I hadn't done this and if I hadn't done that, but if I hadn't done this and I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't be who I am.
No.
'Cause I have a level of depth and complexity that I don't think people so much read, but...
And that you probably didn't have before.
And I wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have traded any of it, any of the experience. And to younger people, don't believe the bullshit. And don't listen to people say, well, you got to have a backup. You know, you got to have a backup. You know, you want to be an actor, that's great, but you got to have a backup. You got to do this, you got to... No. Because I'll tell you, if you're not 150% dedicated to this, you're not going to make it. Because I'll tell you what, there's somebody else who is.
Yes.
So, and again, I don't trade my experience for anything, but if you're out there and you're drinking and you're partying and then you go into rehearsal, man, and doing your thing, and yeah, I got it, man, I got this. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Because you want to know what? There's somebody who isn't.
Right.
While you're doing that, there's somebody else who's at home doing his work.
Right.
So, you know, you can play now and pay later, as I am, or you can pay now and play later. So the choice is yours. But, you know, everybody's got to learn their own way. So, and you make things happen in life, but also things happen for a reason, and, you know, things happen to you for a specific reason, and they lead you to where you're going to go. There's only so, I mean, oh, free will, but I think that only is so much. Mm-hmm. I think that there is also sort of a path or destiny set for each of us. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of trying to figure it out without driving yourself insane.
Well, and you seem to have arrived in a really lovely spot.
At this point, yes. I'm very happy where my life is.
And we're happy for you.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So there were ups and downs and lights and darks, but I wouldn't have traded it for anything. This, of course, is the language that people use when they are themselves. And when you listen to Raphael talk about what I like to call the roller coaster ride of his life, you can hear that at every turn, good, bad, wonderful, terrible, proud, shamed, he is actually being himself. He's taking the ride that only he could take. And in the end, even the parts of it that he might have liked to avoid seemed to him to be part of his journey. He can see the entire life as part of what he needed to go through, what he needed to endure, what he needed to experience in order to become more and more and more the person that he really is. And when you see him on stage, you know that he's giving everything he has to whatever role that is. So hopefully this interview has encouraged you to come on down and see Why Can't I Be You at the Players Theater. So it's my hope that when you listen to people like Raphael, you're asking yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Am I saying that although it didn't go exactly the way I might have wanted it to go, I wouldn't change it for anything? I am being myself moment to moment, activity to activity. I am honoring myself. I am being all that I am. Well, if the answer to that is yes, then you have my congratulations. But if this isn't true for you, if you are doing things you don't really want to do, if you are living experiences that you really don't want to live, if you are pretending to be somebody that you're not, that is to say, you are pretending to be an accepting person, and whatever anybody does, no matter how unacceptable others might think it, you can find a way to accept it. Maybe that's not really true. Maybe there's a person inside of you who doesn't want to accept unacceptable behavior, who is hurt, shamed, saddened by the fact that you have tolerated and endured unacceptable behavior, but you can't find the person inside of you who can stand up and say, no, that's not okay. Well, I want you to know that that person is in you. That person was the two-year-old who said, no, not the blue shirt, the pink shirt. That person is still there. And it may not be too late for you to recover what you came in with, the person you really are. And of course, this example I'm giving about standing up for yourself, this is only one of the ways in which we deny who we really are. Maybe you wanted to sing or dance or paint or write, and somehow you got discouraged from that. I don't know how many people I've heard say, well, you know, I started right out. I was painting on the walls. I was painting on my, you know, shoes. I loved it. But then I saw what other people could do, and I thought, well, I'll never be that good. Where did that come from? How did you allow that to stop you from the joy and the pleasure and the exuberance that you had when you were painting your shoes? Well, maybe it's not too late to get back that joy.
maybe there are other ways in which you are not exactly what your culture says you should be. Maybe you're pretending to be other than you are. Well, the Lin Show is about saying it may not be too late to recover what you may have lost so that you too can say, even though everything I've experienced has not been what I would have wanted, I wouldn't have changed it for anything. I am the person I really am. Well, as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use. Something that you learned that you didn't know, something that made you laugh, as I was laughing. Something that's going to bring you down to see, why can't I be you? Something that inspired you to ask, am I all that I really am? Can I risk trying to get back what I might have lost? Something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be, too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang.